I am not ashamed of the gospel, and gospel means good news, and this good news is focused on salvation through Messiah Yeshua, the Lord Jesus. And this message, and this message alone, is the power of God that is able to bring salvation to everyone who believes, first to the Jewish people, and then to the Gentiles. Shalom to the WLQV Faith Talk 1500 audience. This is Rabbi Lauren coming to you live by Skype from the studios of Congregation Shema Yisrael with Jesus Made Me Kosher. Well, today I have a special guest. He's an old friend of mine, Dr. Rich Robinson. Rich came to faith at Syracuse University as a student in 1973. He has been on staff with Jews for Jesus since 1978. Rich has served on their music team, the Liberated Wailing Wall, and as a missionary at several of the Jews for Jesus branches around the United States. In 1995, he began the Jews for Jesus website, which is a great website. And Rich is currently the senior researcher with the Jews for Jesus ministry. He's a real scholar. He holds a Master of Divinity from Trinity Evangelical Divinity School and a PhD from Westminster Theological Seminary. Rich is coming to us from San Francisco. So, Rich, welcome to Jesus Made Me Kosher.
Thank you, Lauren. It's great to be on your show today.
And it's wonderful to have you, my old friend, Rich. Well, Rich, give us your story. How did the living God reveal himself to you and show you that Yeshua is our wonderful Jewish Messiah? How has Jesus made you kosher?
Well, Lauren, it was a bit of a journey for me. I grew up, as I think you might know yourself, in Brooklyn, New York, in a Reformed Jewish family. So that's being, of course, the liberal wing of Judaism. Probably it was my grandfather, my mother's father, who had the most religious influence on our family, because I remember as a child he was teaching me the blessings like the hamotzi over the bread, and I remember going to the shul with him for the high holidays. And, you know, I think because of his influence, the Jewishness in my home was probably a little more than it might have been otherwise. So I grew up pretty much as a person who would do Passover, Hanukkah, at the synagogue. We're really the temple because we were Reform. We would, you know, have a sukkah every year at Sukkot on Simchas Torah. We would run around with the jelly apples and the Israeli flags. And had my bar mitzvah at age 13. And after that, my Jewish education, such as it was after bar mitzvah, consisted in going to a Jewish summer camp for a few summers and sort of sponsored actually by the Zionist organization HaShomer HaTzair. So we sort of did Ulpan, intensive Hebrew instruction in the morning, and basically just continued to immerse myself in some aspects of Jewish culture and Judaism. But the thing was for me personally that I still found myself on a spiritual search beginning in high school and leading me through my college years, really. I never had a question, you know, about my Jewishness. It was just a part of me. You know, there was never any identity issue on that score, but I just wanted something more out of life at a spiritual level.
Rich, and let me interrupt for a sec.
Sure.
You know, you obviously had a substantial Jewish upbringing, and you identified yourself as a Jewish person, went to synagogue, had your bar mitzvah, went to these Jewish camps and learned intensive Hebrew. During this time, did you feel particularly close to God? Did you sense that, you know, God was near and that you had a relationship with him?
No, I mean, not really. You know, I used to ask my parents growing up, you know, is there a God? And my mother was pretty much, Yeah, sure. And my dad, maybe less so. And my father's mother, my grandmother, you know, she believed in God, but to her, I think God was like everything, the flowers and the rainbow and the animals and everything good is God, maybe something like that. But a personal relationship with God, I mean, the question wasn't even on my burner at that point.
I bring it up because Christians have this misunderstanding that Jewish people, we really know the Bible. You know, we learn it so well growing up in our Jewish families, and we are close to God. And the reality is, for the vast majority of Jewish people living in the United States and Israel, we really don't know the Bible very well, and we are certainly not close to God.
No, that actually segues into the next step in my journey, Lauren, which is that, you know, today the Jewish community, almost any spirituality goes in today's Jewish community except for Jesus. Jesus is still like the big no for most Jews, but anything else, atheism, agnosticism, New Age, here in San Francisco, significant number of Jews are involved in Buddhism, and actually known as Jubus, and books have been written on all of this. So my spiritual journey was kind of a part of just the general mindset of today's Jewish community. And it took me really, well, here's how it worked, okay? When I was growing up in my teen years, there was a book lying around my house about somebody named Edgar Cayce. Cayce isn't a very well-known name today, but back then it was. Basically, he was a guy who was a he kind of started out as a Sunday school teacher, but somehow he went off and he began to go into trances and say things in these trances, and people would come to him supposedly, you know, with their illnesses, and he would prescribe the cure. And it was kind of an odd cure, but they say it always worked. And I started reading about him, and I got extremely interested to the point where I was ready to just listen to anything else that he had to say. And the funny thing is that he did have some things to say about Jesus. And oftentimes, you know, I reflect on it, and I think that if someone had just walked up to me out of a typical church and said, "You need to believe in Jesus," I probably would have said at that point, like most Jews do, you know, "I'm Jewish, that's not for me, thank you." But the Jesus that Edgar Cayce was talking about was much more Eastern than it was like a church Jesus. And in today's climate, that was much more okay for me. So I began to get interested in his version of Jesus. But to get back to your other question, Lauren, it just still was not either satisfying me spiritually or helping me to understand God in any significant way. So I kept up my search during my first few years of college by exploring whatever I could. I took religion classes. I was really deeply, deeply interested in the whole subject of religion in general. I took classes. I went to a Hare Krishna meeting once just to check it out. I wrote a paper for one of my classes where I tried to combine Hinduism and Christianity into one religion. And I was kind of disappointed, you know, when the professor marked me like B- or something. I was annoyed that he couldn't see the brilliance of this idea. But I finally, in my frustration, I bought a book called 500 Ways That People Can Grow. And it had everything in alphabetical order from astrology to Zen Buddhism. And I'm going through this book, and I'm trying to figure out what's the best way to plug into God. Because I really feel that at that point in my life, there was a real hunger to know, I don't know if I would have called it God yet, but just to know reality, to know spiritual reality. And I got to the section of the book in the alphabet, the letter Y, and I began to practice yoga for a little while, and I gave it up really quickly because I couldn't twist my body into all the positions that the guru was in the book. And so I got very frustrated and gave up yoga. And At that point, I met a Christian from one of the campus Christian groups on school. This was Syracuse University, upstate New York. And at the time I was going through all this, I should say I was, you know, a member of Hillel, used to hang out in the Hillel office with the other Jewish students, get into discussions sometimes about spiritual things, about Jesus. But when this Christian approached me, I realized the one thing I hadn't done in my life with all my searching is that I hadn't confronted the reality that there was sin in my life that needed to be dealt with. Now, every year, you know, go to Yom Kippur services, you think about sin, but not really the rest of the time. And I realized that the Jesus Edgar Cayce was talking about had said nothing about sin and wasn't able to really connect me to God. Well, to make a long story short, I argued with my new Christian friend for about 9 months. And at the end of that time, I just sort of had a little bit of a spiritual crisis there where I said, I'm tired of fighting God. I think I recognize what's true. And I gave my life over to Jesus as the Bible describes him, not as Edgar Cayce describes him. And, Lauren, you know me. You know I'm not an emotional guy. But that was like the only time in my life when like a switch flipped and I knew something different had happened to me. And let me add one more thing if I could, and that is this, that I know whenever I talk to, you know, another Jewish person about Jesus, the bottom line objection really turns into, you know, it's not a Jewish thing to do. If I believe in Jesus, I'm not going to be Jewish anymore, or I'll be a bad Jew, and you know, I'm going to switch teams. That's how people put it. I get asked sometimes, why did you switch teams? So, you know, the question average Jewish person is going to ask is, this is not a Jewish thing to do. I got to say my question was a little bit different. I figured it really, if it was true, it was Jewish. If it was true, it was also Gentile. I mean, truth is truth. And if Jesus was who people were saying that he was, that's not going to change whether you're Jewish or Gentile. Of course, I'm going to continue being Jewish. That wasn't even an issue for me. My issue was, is it true or is it not true? And that's really the path that I kind of pursued, just trying to really figure out, is Jesus really God? Is that possible? And, you know, I was still playing around with Eastern thinking. And I believed in reincarnation, and I used a verse in the Bible, you must be born again, to, quote, prove reincarnation. No, that's not what it means, but it was a convenient verse to defend reincarnation with. And I was checking everything out. I even used to go to the local meetings of a Catholic priest on campus. Okay, we're talking the 70s, so they called these rap sessions. And basically what he did is he just came over to the dorm, sat in a chair. People fired questions at him for like an hour or so, whether you were Catholic or not. And it was also through him that I got to thinking a little bit more. So I had all these directions coming at me. And finally, it was the fall or maybe the spring, I don't quite remember, of 1973 when I became a believer in Jesus at Syracuse University. Didn't know about other Jews who believed. That really wasn't something that I was necessarily seeking after. I was still going to Hillel, still hanging out there, hanging out with the Catholic guys, hanging out with other Christian groups. And to me, it was all part of who I was. I was Jewish. Now I believed in Jesus.
Rich, a couple questions. It sounds like God really helped you navigate through this maze of spiritual options that are so prevalent in our society today. My journey was very similar to yours with all these different influences, and the Lord helped me also come to a saving knowledge of Messiah. What convinced you as far as evidence that Jesus really is the Messiah of Israel and the Savior of the world? Was there anything in particular?
Well, that's a great question. because through my journeys, I had already opened up to Jesus at certain levels. But I would say that it was not, you know, logical argumentation that finally sealed the decision for me. I already firmly believed that there was something special about who Jesus was because of Edgar Cayce, because of some other explorations. I mean, people from all these different religious traditions, they always had something positive to say about Jesus, and I knew there was something special about him. And I had read the Bible, probably the New Testament, sometime during the final year before I came to faith in Jesus, and was kind of still filtering it through an Eastern grid or an Edgar Cayce kind of grid. And I am a logical person, and yet I have to say honestly, what finally tipped it for me was just this sense that I was fighting against God, that Edgar Cayce's Jesus wasn't answering the real problems of life. And the big tipping thing for me there was that he just never talked about sin. And even though that's an unpopular word today, to this very day, that is something that continues to convince me of the truth of the gospel message, the truth about Jesus. Because, you know, we all know this world is a messed up place, and there's a moral component to all this evil in the world that we see in the news every day, and we are all part of that picture. We are all, you know, part of the evil that's in this world. Now, there's a lot of good that people can do as well, but sometimes, you know, I think of it this way. You know, God created us in his image. He created us good, but there's a spiritual cancer that has infected humanity, sin. And when you have a disease or cancer or anything else, you don't sit around talking about how healthy the rest of the body is. You attack the disease. And so I knew that even though, you know, people do wonderful things, they're kind to others, they can do great art, great music, we've got to deal with that aspect of reality that is creating all these problems in the world that's in each one of our lives. And Edgar Cayce passed all of that by. Jesus was for him maybe a great example of what we could achieve, what we could climb to. So I guess if something had to tip it over, it was just that innate sense, I guess, in myself that, you know, there's something wrong with us that's got to get dealt with. And, you know, the gospel, as my friend explained it, totally dealt with that. Edgar Cayce, the Eastern religions, didn't deal with that. Mostly, I think for many, if maybe most other religions outside Judaism and Christianity, the problem of life is that we don't know enough. We don't know the right things. We don't have the right kind of knowledge. And if we only do the right technique, we meditate, we do yoga, we do something to attain this knowledge, then that will be, you know, quote unquote, our salvation. That's not it. It's not a matter of knowledge. It's a matter of something moral. And, you know, I don't see how you can read the news, frankly, and think any differently. So that, just that reality in the world, I think, is something that definitely tipped me towards the gospel. Does that help?
It does, and I find that really interesting that it's the biblical doctrine of sin, which, from a practical perspective, as you said, is really one of the easiest doctrines to prove. It's so obvious that this world and human beings are, you know, we live in a messed up place and we're messed up creatures. What would you say to, you know, these pastors? Rabbi Glenn and I last Friday were analyzing Joel Osteen, this popular pastor with the largest church in the United States, and he really de-emphasizes this doctrine of sin. What would you say to Christians who don't want to talk about the reality of sin and call it, you know, sin?
Sure. Well, I don't know too much about Joel Osteen, though. I wish I had his hairstyle. He's got good hair. But in terms of his doctrine, I would say to someone who is minimizing sin, you know, it's an uncomfortable subject, but we've got to deal with it. You know, we all want to talk about the good things in life, and we should. We want to honor those who've done well. We should uphold those who are doing acts of kindness, who are working for social justice. We should do all of those things. But the flip side is that humanity has got a big problem. And the problem is something that Jesus spoke of when he said, you know, the person who commits sin is a slave of sin. And, you know, he was talking to Jewish people. When you said slavery, maybe they would think about Passover, or maybe they would think about the fact that they were under the oppression of Rome. And those were serious problems. But, you know, what drove Pharaoh to be a taskmaster? What drove Caesar to be a tyrant? It was something that wasn't just in their hearts, but in all of our hearts. And a quick story. I was in Israel on an evangelism trip, actually back in the 90s. And, you know, a young man there, I guess on the beach maybe, said to me something that, you know, we're so familiar that we've heard it before. He said, if Jesus is the Messiah, why isn't there peace in the world? And it's a great question, because isn't the Messiah supposed to bring peace? But what I said to him is, you know, God could snap his fingers and he could bring peace this second. But if we stayed the same in our hearts and we didn't change, we'd mess the world up again in just a couple of weeks. I said, God isn't going to force peace out there. I said, for there to be peace in this world, we need to change, and you need to make your peace with God through his way, through Jesus, and let him turn you into the kind of person who can bring his shalom to the rest of the world. In Judaism, we talk a lot about tikkun olam, the repair of the world, which for many Jews means going out and doing social justice things, which is good. But the real repair has to start in our hearts. The real tikkun has to begin within ourselves. And so to someone who's minimizing sin, I would say, you know, I'm not trying to be a downer here. You know, I'm not trying to be negative. But let's deal with this reality, and then God can move us to a better place where we can celebrate our redemption in him.
Rich, with only 1 minute remaining or so, what would you say to a Jewish person who may be listening to Jesus Made Me Kosher?
I would say, you know, I don't know where you are in your own life. I don't know if you're on a spiritual journey or not, but I would say if you haven't thought about how relevant Jesus can be for a Jewish person, and if you haven't read the New Testament for yourself, which is written almost all by Jews, go for it, just for your own education, but also because, you know, Jesus was Jewish. It started as a message among our people, and it's still a message for our people as well as for everyone else. I would just challenge you to read the New Testament and consider Jesus for yourself.
That's great, and I totally agree. I would like to have you back sometime, and I'd like to talk about what Jewish writers and scholars are saying about Jesus and the New Testament these days. A lot's been happening in the world of Jewish scholarship and academia regarding Jesus. And
that's right.
Would you
well,
say
I'd
it's more
delighted to come back, Lauren, sometime.
That'd be great. And also maybe we can talk about Shmuley Boteach's book, The Kosher Jesus. He's an Orthodox rabbi who just wrote about Jesus, the kosher Jesus. And you've been thinking about that and blogging about that too, right?
I've been blogging about that on the Jews for Jesus website. So if anyone's interested, they can head over to jewsforjesus.org, and they should find a link right on the front.
Thank you so much, Rich, for being my guest on Jesus Made Me Kosher today. Let's do it again sometime soon, okay?
It's been a pleasure, Lauren. Thank you for having me.
Shalom.
Shalom.
Well, this is Rabbi Lauren. You've been listening to Jesus Made Me Kosher. We are on WLQV, Faith Talk 1500, Monday through Friday at 3:30, and I hope you'll join me again tomorrow. Shalom, shalom.
Jesus Made Me Kosher is sponsored by Congregation Shema Yisrael, a community of Messianic Jews and kosher-hearted Gentiles who serve the three-in-one God of Israel. You can find us on the web at shema.com. That's S-H-E-M-A.com. If you'd like more information or have questions, you can also reach us by phone at 248-593-5150. That's 248-593-5150. To hear how Jesus can make you kosher, join us every weekday at 3:30 right here on Faith Talk 1500.